What is up? Welcome to another edition of the NFL Fantasy Football Show. It's me, your man, MG Marcus Grant, still masking, socially distancing when and where necessary, joined by our pal Michael F. Florio. And Florio, it's been, I'd say a wild couple days. I feel like things are happening, but we've all been sort of drowned out by, like, you know, GameStop and AMC and everything. Like, I feel like that has been, I don't know that, have football things happened? So I feel like we've been just surrounded by stonks talk for the last few days.
It's weird because, like, I have to scroll through my timeline to actually get to football stuff because everything is just, like, NBA Top Shot and stonks this week. Like, that is my entire timeline right now. It's weird. It seems like the weekends are calm and we could watch football, and then the weekdays lately have just been insane.
Okay, explain to me Top Shot. Like, I have seen people talk about this, and like I've never been a card collector. I just know it's like the new form of card collecting. It's like the future of collectibles. I don't even know what this is.
So I bought my first NBA Top Shot last night just because I was bored. I bought like a $2 Knicks Mitchell Robinson one, and it's basically digital trading cards. And for me, like, when I first heard about it, I was like, this sounds dumb. Why are people paying for a video that we can get for free online? But then it's just basically what, like, it's collector's items that like they release a certain number of each card or of the packs. And basically it's just trading cards that you can't hold or anything, but you can watch on your computer screen.
Okay. I admit that, you know, again, I'm not a collector, and I am probably aging quickly out of the demographic for which this is intended. So I'm not going to yuck anybody else's yums. I saw somebody say that they had spent like $100,000 on one of these. Like,
yeah.
Wow. All right. I don't really know what to say about it other than good for you, and I hope it works out.
I will not invest anything more than like the $2 investment I put in the other day, but I'll buy like the packs maybe. But yeah, some people are just, they're going all in on this and hoping that it's the future.
Also, what happens to the folks who do unboxing videos? You know, I know that, you know, look, there's friend of the program, if you will, Al Smizzle on Twitter. He does like unboxing videos where he opens packs. Like, what happens for those folks?
I think they're hoping that this kind of flames out and isn't the future, because maybe they can coexist, but it feels to me like the people who are interested in trading cards and unboxing are also going to be the collectors interested in Top Shot.
Probably true. Steve, I know you had some thoughts. I don't know if you know any more about this than I do. I would love to hear your thoughts on this.
I mean, I agree. This is like an absolutely ridiculous idea, but because you can find these clips online anyway. But I will say that, like, probably a year and a half ago, I went in my old closet and I found that Charizard Pokemon card, and I sold that on eBay for like $2,000. It was like the first edition, like mint, like Charizard card. I actually kind of like miss it a little bit, to be honest. But and maybe that'll be what these will be. I'm not gonna knock it.
I'm not gonna knock it either. I'm just saying that I don't get it. Like, I was the kid who, when I was little, I thought the whole point of collecting baseball cards was just to get as many as possible. I didn't realize you're supposed to, cause like I used to just play with them. I would like lay them out on the floor and like, you know, line up, you know, the American League versus National League All-Star teams and like actually try to play games. And so like they all got kind of, you know, wrinkled and messed up. Cause I didn't understand. I didn't understand that the whole point was to collect them and they turned into money. I didn't get it.
Maybe you can like line them up in an order and then create like a game or like a movie.
I bought two. I bought one and they're from the same game. One was a Mitchell Robinson dunk because there was no packs available last night. They dropped randomly, apparently. So you can only buy individual moments. And I bought an Alec Burke assist, two Knicks, and they're from the same game. So I think if I kind of get enough from that game, I could piece it together and maybe just watch the whole game.
That would be amazing. Now, I would be willing to, like, I'm not going to invest in that, but I'd be willing to see somebody else invest in that. Like, that would be kind of fun.
And it's the Knicks, so it's they're not like their top dollar or anything.
Exactly. You know, you're not putting the other, like, you know, the 2015 Warriors or something like that. So, yeah. All right. I learned something new today. So I appreciate that, guys. All right. We are finishing our exit interviews. We got our final four teams in today's session. We will wrap this up. And then just a quick side note. We are back with you again next week. As always, we got two shows next week. We're going to go dark for a week. Once the Super Bowl hits, we're going to take a week off, and then we'll regroup and we'll be back with you the week after. So, you know, I'll remind you again next week, but just know that coming up, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to take a breath. We're going to regroup. And then, you know, we will dive headlong into the fantasy offseason. But let's kind of wrap this up. We will start at pick number 29, which is you know, sort of where we left off the last time, with the Green Bay Packers, 13-3. They win the division. Yet once again, they are left wanting because they lose in another NFC championship game, this time losing at home at Lambeau Field to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But Flory, up until that point, it had been a great run for the Packers offense. We spent all year talking about the Aaron Rodgers petty party and how great Devontae Adams was. I feel like for fantasy, it was everything we wanted because you had a productive player at each of the main positions, and you didn't have to so much worry about ball distribution because it was a pretty targeted offense this year.
Yeah, I mean, Devontae Adams was, I think, the best part of this offense. He missed a little bit of time, but basically came back and scored 18 fantasy points every single game. I know he was a top five wide receiver all time in fantasy points per game with his total this season. So he was a super fun bright spot. And then remember, like, before the year, we were saying, like, oh, Aaron Jones touchdown regression might come, and it did come, but he was still a RB1 this year. So I think that the fact that, like, Rodgers, Jones, and Devontae Adams were all really good for fantasy, that's all you want from an offense.
It really is. I mean, I know that I say this all the time. For actual football, having a lot of options to spread the ball around to is a good thing. But for our purposes, if we can just target a handful of guys, and we knew Devontae Adams was going to be great. Maybe we didn't know how great, but we knew he was going to be great. We knew Aaron Jones was probably going to be pretty productive, even if regression was going to hit. And then it turned out that Aaron Rodgers looked like the Aaron Rodgers of old. And then midway through the season, we were introduced to Robert Tonyan, which, you know, was a big help at a position that we were really looking for some depth at. And I just want to ask, because I feel like Tonyan is going to be one of those guys that we're going to debate a lot this offseason, because in terms of, you know, receptions and yardage, the numbers weren't really spectacular, but the touchdown number was huge for him. I always say touchdowns are fickle beasts. Should we look at this with a grain of salt, or can we sort of dive full speed ahead into Robert Tonyan as kind of a mid-tier tight end next year?
I think we got to look at it with a grain of salt, and not just for him. I think for the other pieces of this offense as well, not named Devontae Adams, because he is just head and shoulders so much better than the other wide receivers as of late. But like Robert Tonyan, 3.5 targets per game, I believe, is what he averaged this year. You cannot bank on 3.5 targets finishing as a tight end one again next year. Can he get a larger workload? Yes, of course. But he's also the first tight end that Aaron Rodgers has really taken a liking to and kind of made fantasy relevant in quite some time. And I'm expecting touchdown regression to hit Aaron Rodgers pretty hard. And I think if it hits Rodgers, it's going to hit Tonyan as well. And if that's the case and you're not getting, you know, all those touchdowns, like we were saying, what are you going to get? You're going to get a very inconsistent tight end who could give you 5 points if he doesn't score a touchdown that week.
That is going to be the big thing, right? I was going to say it's something like what I said about Darren Waller coming into this past season, but even then, Waller still had a ton of targets and was still getting a lot of looks. And so, I just feel like if the touchdowns don't hit again, if he doesn't get you double-digit touchdowns, then you're going to be really frustrated with what you get from him. Beyond that, I mean, on the other side of the things that weren't good, I feel like it's a nitpicking, but really outside of, say, Adams and Jones and Tonyan, the Packers still don't have receiving help. I don't know that we can count on Marquez Valdes-Scantling or Alan Lazard, or, you know, even late we saw Equanimeous St. Brown sort of pop up and get some opportunities there. Is there anybody else outside of maybe those big three or four guys we can count on? I mean, are we buying A.J. Dillon, for instance, next year? Or is it still kind of like, you know, the guys we know and that's all we're doing?
as of now, for me, it is the guys we know. Aaron Jones and Jamal Williams are both free agents. So, if Jones leaves, then I think A.J. Dillon becomes one that we can trust in this offense. But, yeah, I think the glaring need for a second playmaker in the passing game showed its head against the Bucs this past week, because how many times did we see Aaron Rodgers force the ball and goal-to-go situations to Devontae Adams with multiple defenders around him? And yeah, Devontae Adams had that one bad touchdown drop. He had the other one where he couldn't get his legs in bound. But on that third, the big third and goal play where they ended up kicking the field goal after that, and you know, we could say Aaron Rodgers could have ran, Devontae Adams had two, and I get it. You go down swinging to your best player, it's hard to knock that. But he had two defenders draped all over him. And that is a prime situation where if you have a second playmaker, someone else who can get open, maybe Rodgers doesn't feel the need to force the ball to Devontae Adams. But it just felt like, to me, when it mattered most, Rodgers knows that he only has one option that he can trust, and it was Devontae Adams. And the Bucs kind of took that away from them.
That sort of has made them, I'd say, easier to defend. I should put air quotes around that, because Devontae Adams is so good, especially getting releases off the line, that it's not an easy task, but it does sort of make them a little less varied in what they do. And I would be surprised if this year we don't see them go after some wide receiver help. We thought they would last year in the draft. They didn't. Maybe they do that this year. Now, the other thing that's come out of this loss for the Packers was Aaron Rodgers sort of sounding very exasperated after the game, and leading a lot of people to believe that maybe he wants out, that maybe he is done in Green Bay. Now, he has since sort of clarified that and said, you know, maybe that's not exactly what he was saying, and he was frustrated. One, do you think Aaron Rodgers will actually leave, or that the Packers would let him go? And two, what happens to this offense if, by some weird chance, there is no 12 in Green Bay next year?
I think Aaron Rodgers would very much so leave and go play somewhere else. I don't think the Packers will let him, though. And if he was to leave, I think this whole offense, Devontae Adams sadly included, crumble down with him, because Rodgers has just kept this offense afloat for so long. And I get his frustration, because I wish I remember who tweeted it out, but I saw after the game, someone tweeted, A.J. Dillon was the only player from their 2020 draft class to play a snap this year. Like, that is terrible. And you should, you make it to the NFC Championship game last year. You're with an aging quarterback. Your mindset, in my opinion, should be, let's do everything we can to capitalize on this moment. And they did the exact opposite. And Rodgers was still able to spitefully will them to the NFC Championship game again, but he couldn't get over the hump. And I understand his frustration, but I do not think they let him go. But Marcus, I'm expecting regression for this offense, even if Aaron Rodgers is there. Like, Rodgers scored 50% of his fantasy points this year on touchdowns, the highest in the NFL. He had the third highest touchdown percentage since 1980. And the other quarterbacks who were higher both had their touchdown percentage come down a good amount after that season. So if Rodgers goes from even around 50 touchdowns to 35 to 40, like, that's a huge hit for him and for this offense.
That, not only that, but also the fact that he is incredibly good at protecting the football. I mean, he had 5 interceptions this past year. And you sort of look, that has kind of been his MO. He has not thrown double-digit interceptions since 2010. So he's been very good at protecting the football. But you are asking a lot to have him continue that touchdown to interception ratio. And again, if you're not going to put some help around him and start to kind of build this offense a little bit more beyond just those handful of guys, it is going to be tough. Especially in a division where, look, the Bears are not, they had their struggles this year. But I think you give them a decent quarterback, I think they can turn things around offensively. The Vikings are not an awful team. The Lions have some work to do. Sorry, Steve. But there are teams that aren't really that far away from being really competitive in that division. And I think at some point the Packers have to kind of figure things out. So I'll say this. Remember, last year, you and I were of the same mind, and we were not alone in thinking that Aaron Rodgers was maybe a fringe quarterback one at best. Do we go back into next year with that mindset, or do we just sort of shake it off because of what he did in 2020?
So I'm going to shake it off. In my early top 12 quarterback article, I had Rodgers at I believe, 7 or 8. Like him and Justin Herbert, I had right next to one another. And I think to some that may seem like, oh, you're low on Aaron Rodgers. He should be top 5. He's going to be the MVP this year. For me, he doesn't do enough with his legs compared to all the other quarterbacks there. But I still think he, yeah, I've changed my stance from last year. I think he is a QB1. My only question now, though, is what is Green Bay going to do to keep him spiteful or to keep him motivated like that? Like, do they draft another quarterback this year? Because maybe that effect is going to wear off. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you can't keep drafting quarterbacks, right? Just to hopefully light a fire under him. I don't know that that works every year. Steve says Lions Super Bowl 2022, which, I mean, sure, they can buy a ticket like the rest of us, so that's certainly not impossible.
Brutal. Come on, Marcus.
Kneecap, are they going to be biting off in that Super Bowl?
I don't know. That's a good question. Hey, look, I kid. And I do appreciate the fact that Lions fans, you guys are eternally hopeful and you are steadfast. And that is to be respected. Nah, I mean, like, all real talk like that. Props to you guys for keeping the faith all these years. Yeah, you know, like I Steve, I don't know if you had something to add to that. We love getting the Lions perspective here.
I mean, we just got some really, really good coaches. So, I mean, how can they not win a Super Bowl with that? Right? They got great assistant coaches. That's the spin that we've been receiving.
Hey, look, if you're Dan Campbell, that's the smart move. Put a lot of smart assistants around you as a guy who doesn't have a lot of head coaching experience.
The spin is he's a good coaching recruiter. So I guess
this is the way. Who would have thought we'd have Lions talk in the middle of this, exit interview session here? But, you know, that's what we do. All right. So that takes us to pick number 30. And the team that is near and dear to your own heart, Florida, the Buffalo Bills, 13-3. And the team that dethroned the New England Patriots atop the AFC East. They get to the AFC Championship game where they lose a heartbreaker to the Chiefs. Really no shame in that, especially considering how this team has progressed over the last few years. I mean, I will open the floor to you as somebody who watches them very closely. What things impressed you offensively about this team in 2020?
It's just Josh Allen. Like, the fact that he went from – I remember on his draft night, and I will hold that L because I'm not a huge college fan, but every – you know, analysts and everything about Josh Allen was he is not going to work in the NFL level. So on draft night 2018, I was like, anyone but Josh Allen. Fast forward just a couple years later, and he is, if it wasn't for Aaron Rodgers, I think Josh Allen wins the MVP this year. And the fact that he was doing it once again with his legs, he became, I believe, the first quarterback ever with 8 or more rushing touchdowns in each of his first 3 seasons. Still gave you over 400 rushing yards, but then put up monstrous passing game numbers and set the Bills record for yards and touchdowns and everything. Like, he is what to be excited about in this offense. And Stephon Diggs as well deserves a ton of credit, finishing as a top 3 wide receiver and winning a bunch of people fantasy championships this year.
Big kudos to Josh Allen and the folks working with him, because you know this, the knock on him was his accuracy and how well he could get the ball downfield. And it was great that he had this big, huge, strong arm, but we were so like, well, it doesn't really matter if he can't connect with any of his wide receivers. But he figured it out this year. I mean, I think it definitely helped, as you mentioned, bringing in Stephon Diggs, like, you know, as a guy who was already sort of on the cusp of being a QB1 in fantasy, adding a top-notch wide receiver like that can only help. But, you know, Josh Allen got better as a passer this year. And we saw that really pay off over the course of the season. We knew he could run the football effectively. He did that. But the fact that he had a huge passing season as well really, I think, sort of changed our outlook on him. I would normally just switch to what needs to get better. But I do want to ask, because this is sort of my big question, after what we saw this past year, would it be crazy to make Josh Allen the first quarterback off the board in 2021?
Would it be crazy? No. Would I do it? No. I would take him second off the board at the quarterback position because what he can give you with his arm and his legs. I think he's one of those rare combinations. Like, Lamar Jackson is great, but you expect more with the legs and the arm. Like, I think Allen is kind of like a Deshaun Watson or a Dak Prescott, where he can give you a lot of points with both. And to me, like the offense, the fact that it's not changing, that Brian Daboll is going to be coming back and calling the plays, and they're going to have Diggs, and maybe they add a playmaker in the draft or a running back, I don't know. But the fact that everyone around him is under contract still and nothing is going to change, I would take him second. But to me, Patrick Mahomes, it's what I say like about Christian McCaffrey at the running back position. I compare them to like Mike Trout in fantasy baseball. Like, is Mike Trout going to finish as the number one player every single year? No. But is he the safest bet to be top five, top 10? Yes. And Matt Stafford. I got Steve's Lions on the brain. But Patrick Mahomes, if he doesn't get hurt, he's guaranteed to be a top four or five quarterback and give you so much upside each week that I would still take him number one.
I think that's probably fair. I think also the point being that we've reached the point where the first quarterback off the board is probably going to be selected in the second, third round, depending on how hyped people are about this player. And for all the great things Josh Allen did and what I think he can do, I don't know that I feel comfortable spending a second or third round pick on Josh Allen. I really don't feel that comfortable spending it on Patrick Mahomes either, but at least I can tell myself a story about it.
Yeah, like I had no Mahomes or Lamar last year, but I had a bunch of those quarterbacks that were going in like the 5 through 7 range, you know, like the Kyler, Dak, Watson, Allen, and Russ Wilson. So I'll do the same thing this year. Like if Josh Allen now replaces Lamar's that top, you know, going in the second or third round, I'll just wait and I'll get Dak or Watson or any of those other quarterbacks in like the 6th or 7th round.
I mean, that's what I did plenty of. I had a lot of Russell Wilson. I had Dak in a couple spots. I had Deshaun Watson in a few spots, and I was perfectly fine with that. I remember in the Scott Fishbowl this past year, I think I took Josh Allen in maybe the 3rd round. It's a 2-quarterback league. I took him in the 3rd round, and I remember getting a lot of heat from people. And I was like, well, one, it's a 2QB league. But second, Josh Allen was the 8th quarterback off the board in my draft. So it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't like I was reaching. At least I didn't feel like I was reaching.
The QB6 2 years ago. So
yeah. So then I quietly felt validated. I didn't, you know, I didn't take receipts. I didn't go showing people, but I felt very quietly validated after the first month of the season when he was balling out. And I'm like, see, everything's fine. You know, I knew what I was doing, even if I didn't. But it's fine. As for the things that need to get better, I keep coming back to, they just need a running game that doesn't expressly involve Josh Allen. You know, if he wants to be involved, that's great, because it's an added dimension. It forces the defense to play 11 on 11 if he gets out of the pocket and runs. But I like Devin Singletary. I think Zach Moss can be a good running back. But Florio, I need those guys to be much more involved. And I just want Devin Singletary, like, I want him to score touchdowns, right? The dude works hard. I want him to be able to score a touchdown. Like, you know, give your workhorse a little bit of sugar every once in a while. I just need those guys to be a little bit more productive so that I can feel confident having them at least as a flex option on a regular basis.
Yeah, as someone who had a lot, like I had more Josh Allen last year than any other player, and I faded Devin Singletary. I kind of liked the way the offense ran, but I think it exposed later in the season that, especially in the playoffs, like you need at least some sort of run game. I do not want them to become like what they were a couple years ago when they were a run first team, and I don't expect that because like Josh Allen after the loss said like Brian Daboll has done a lot of studies on statistics that shows that like passing plays are more efficient than running plays. So I expect them to still be a pass first team, but you need to get something out of the running back position. You can't be in the playoffs giving your running back, you know, one handoff a game. I don't want to see any more TJ Yeldon getting involved. So they do. I don't know if they upgrade or if they do feel comfortable with Singletary and Moss, but they need a little bit more out of the running back position for sure next year.
Did Brian Daboll do a lot of research, or did people just tweet at him a lot that passing plays are more efficient? Because in case you didn't know, Twitter will tell you what's going to be more efficient offensively. All right, so that goes from the Bills. Now, the last two draft spots, I should say, are not officially set. We won't know who picks 31st and 32nd officially until after the Super Bowl is over. So that I will say now that, out of deference to the defending champs, I'm going to put the Chiefs at 32. So that makes for us pick number 31, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Again, you know, prefacing that this could change depending on what happens in Tampa, you know, in about a week and a half or so. But the Bucks, we'll put them at 31. They were 11-5. They were a wild card team. Maybe one of the craziest things I've heard was that this was the first time in his career that Tom Brady was playing on a wild card team. He's played wild card weekend before, but he has never been in the playoffs as a wild card team, which is sort of wild when you figure that. But nonetheless, they win three times. They went all on the road three times to make it to the Super Bowl. And what I thought was really good for this team was the fact that, one, it was Mike Evans, who I thought was a surprise. I didn't think he was going to be as productive as he was this past year. I was sort of fading him. I said I couldn't move him beyond 12 because I was just too scared to do it. And he ended up just kind of in the back part of the top 12. So I guess I ended up sort of being right. Ronald Jones, who I had faith in, ended up being very productive this year. It was sort of hard to pinpoint week to week maybe where the ball was going. But Florio, I think what I appreciated about this offense was there were a lot of very productive pieces. So you could have a Ronald Jones or a Fournette, Evans, Godwin, even Gronk at some point, and at least feel like you were getting decent production. So there were a lot of options, but they ended up all being fairly productive options when it was all said and done.
It was they did for sure, but it was kind of, unless you had Mike Evans, who was, you know, it felt like scoring a touchdown every week. But even Mike Evans, like I feel like, yes, we like, because myself, I was fading him. I had him at like 15, I believe, heading into the season. I overreacted. Mike Evans was better than I thought he would be this year. But even Mike Evans wasn't as good as he was the year prior. Chris Godwin took a huge hit. So they were all good still for fantasy, but not nearly as good as they had been in years past. And there was a lot of, like with Gronk, as someone, because I drafted Gronk in a couple of leagues. He had some really nice weeks, but he also had some really down weeks. And Ronald Jones played great, and I think he looks the part, Marcus. Like, I think he should be their RB1 heading into next season. But he was in and out of the lineup, and so was Leonard Fournette. So it's weird because I think when we think back to this Bucs team and this Bucs offense, we're going to think like they were a really high-powered offense, but it's kind of like the Tyler Lockett effect. It was a little bit annoying if you had some of these players because they were just weeks where they would disappear.
So I have been writing for the last few weeks a series about fantasy tight ends and trying to kind of dig deeper into the position because it's the one that sort of vexes us, I think, the most. This week I wrote about mid-tier tight ends, which I slacked you that I think I might have accidentally talked myself into Mike Gesicki again. Stop that. Don't do that. but also
every time you want to like write anything good or draft Mike Gesicki, just someone like slaps your hand away.
My hand, like, don't do that. Stop it. Bad. You know, like training a puppy, like just squirt me with a water bottle or something. Like, stop. But also one of the things I did note was part of what made Gronk effective was that touchdown upside. The fact that he was one of the most targeted tight ends. In fact, I think he was the most targeted tight end from the 10-yard line and in. And so that, you know, you talk about those floor weeks that were really low, that were frighteningly low. I think sort of what kept us coming back was the fact that Tom Brady was looking his direction when they got near the end zone. And it sort of was a flashback in some ways to their time and their production together in New England. Especially when you talk about Gronk being, you know, a little bit older, having a number of injuries that he has been sort of dealing with over his career. But the fact that we could sort of count on him, he and Mike Evans were the two big options for the Bucs offense when they got near the goal line. And that sort of kept him afloat. And it is sort of like what we talked about with Robert Tonyan, right? That touchdown upside is great. It is hard to count on year after year. The other part is, I mean, look, Florida, they have a lot of tight ends there, right? I mean, Gronk is sort of the headliner, but Cameron Brate we saw get involved. O.J. Howard at some point, you got to believe, is going to be a thing in that offense. I don't know. I feel like there was just way too many options in this offense where it's great, but it's going to be hard, I think, for us to pinpoint who to draft next year. I mean, I don't know if you feel differently, but I just feel like there's so many mouths to feed, and Tom Brady likes to spread the ball around, that it is going to be hard to kind of figure out who to count on week to week.
Yeah, it definitely, I feel the same way. And it's why we talk up offenses that have like tunnel vision, like the Vikings being a great example, because you know that more often than not, Kirk Cousins is going to lock in on Justin Jefferson, Adam Thielen, or Dalvin Cook is going to get the ball, right? But with the Bucks, they've now you add Antonio Brown into the mix, who I would be surprised if he's playing on a different team and not with Tom Brady next season. Like, it's just so many mouths to feed, like you said, Marcus, that there's no clarity. Like, I had Chris Godwin in a league. It was a keeper league, and I got to keep him for cheap because, you know, I drafted him like 2 years ago when he wasn't really a thing. And I was benching him like in the fantasy playoffs because there was, I was like, yeah, maybe he could give me 20, but like he could also give me like 8 because he was just been so up and down. So like I went with a little bit safer options than like Terry McLaurin and other players like that. But to me, yeah, like the many mouths to feed is great for Tom Brady. I mean, he had his best season, really, I think you could say, since like 2007, maybe at least touchdown wise. And the high touchdown rate led to him being a QB1. And I think you said it the other day, he had 6 rushing yards, it was. And he was a QB1 in today's era. And it's just so hard. But it's because his numbers were inflated with the touchdowns. If that comes down a little bit next year, and again, I don't want to sound like a Brady hater, but at some point the wheels have to fall off, right? Like when is that going to happen? So for me, I could see myself being like, this Bucks offense, it could be just like it was last year, but I could see myself trying to fade some of these pieces next year.
A couple things. One, Chris Godwin, I believe, is a free agent this year. So we'll see what happens with that. I know Antonio Brown, also a free agent potentially. We'll see if one or both or none of those guys comes back and how that impacts the offense. Two, I said this to some friends yesterday. I'm currently comparing Tom Brady to GameStop stock. Right. Like every year we try to short Tom Brady. Like this is probably going to happen. Right. Like, you know, he's 43. He's going to be 44 next year. Like, you know, at some point it comes for all of us. And we all try to short Tom Brady and he goes out and he does what he did this year, which is to be a QB1 and help lead another team to a Super Bowl. Like, eventually we're probably going to be right. But in the meantime, we're going to keep losing our butts.
The scary thing, though, is I don't think we're going to get a warning sign. Like look at Peyton Manning and Drew Brees and even Big Ben to an extent. It's like they're good. And then it's over.
Right. It's not like with quarterbacks, there isn't just a decline. Like it is, you just fall off a cliff. I think, you know, you don't get this, hey, you know, it's slowly kind of coming apart. It's like, no, it just all goes at one time. And so I think that's also why we keep trying to fade Tom Brady, because nobody wants to be left holding the bag, right? Like when this all falls apart, you don't want to have him on your fantasy roster when it all comes apart. So that's why everybody's just trying to like short him and we keep losing. But at some point we'll be right. I just don't know.
At some point though, they could just make it where like the app can't draft Tom Brady or something to me.
Exactly. They'll just say, you know, this is for your own good. You can't draft Tom Brady. All you dynasty people who have him already, you're fine. You can trade him. But for the rest of you, you're out. You're out of luck. All right. That gets us to our last team here. Topical humor. It's great. It gets us to our last team at the number 32 pick. Again, this is all tentative. But it is the Kansas City Chiefs who, you know, at some point, if you sort of listen to gambling Twitter over the last 6 or 8 weeks, the Chiefs are like the worst 14-2 team ever. Because, you know, like they weren't blowing people out and what are they doing? And, you know, they haven't really turned it on, which is probably, you know, if you were a Bills fan, that was probably bad news for you to keep hearing that all week long.
All I heard all week was that the Chiefs have been one of the worst red zone offenses as of late. And the Bills have been one of the best red zone defenses. And there was absolutely no stopping Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah. You know, I mean, he turned back into, you know, Patrick Mahomes, the wizard, at the worst time for Bills fans, best time for Chiefs fans. Look, I feel like what was good for them in 2020 is what has been good for them for a long time now, at least the last few years. It was Patrick Mahomes. It was Travis Kelce. It was Tyreek Hill. And this was like the best of both worlds, Florida, because it's an offense that is great in real life and it is great in fantasy because it is very targeted, but it is very productive. You've got three guys who are legitimately the top 5 at their respective positions, and it's hard to find that anywhere. I mean, they're as set it and forget it as you can come right now, the big three for the Chiefs offense.
Yeah, in 2018, I believe they were the first team ever to have the QB1, wide receiver 1, and tight end 1 all on the same offense. And for a large stretch of this year, before Devontae Adams really caught fire, they were doing it again. Like Tyreek Hill finished as the wide receiver two. Travis Kelce, there was one tight end. Darren Waller was the only tight end within 135 fantasy points of him. And even Darren Waller was nearly 40 behind Travis Kelce. So for me, Travis Kelce was the 2020 fantasy MVP. I know you had to pay a high price to get him, but you get top five wide receiver numbers out of a tight end, and we all know how volatile tight end can be week to week and everything. So, and then Patrick Mahomes, yeah, he finishes as the QB4. He sits out the final week of the season, but when you look at it, he's still giving you nearly 25 fantasy points per game. I mean, what? And the scary part, Mark, is like, maybe they add even another playmaker to this offense, because we saw like last year in the draft, they're not afraid to keep adding pieces to this offense.
Which, speaking of which, so I know we were all disappointed by Clyde Edwards-Helaire this year. Was it that he was not good, or was that we just had too high of expectation for him?
I think we had, and I am as guilty as anyone of it, I think we had too high of expectations for him. And this is something I realized. I realize it every year when I go over like what happened this year and what went wrong. Oftentimes when we call players bust or anything, it's more to do with the expectation that we set for that player than they just went out and did it and, you know, completely bombed. That does happen, but a lot of the times it's because we get really excited about a player and expect a breakout, and it doesn't come quite to that level. But with that being said, like, Clyde Edwards-Helaire did show us at times that, like, he can play at this in the NFL at a high level. Really weird season for all rookies. And I think it's going to lead to him potentially being a discounted player next year, because everyone's going to be like, oh, he didn't live up to expectations as a rookie.
I bought into the CEH hype, and I drafted him in one league. I did get him, I think, like fifth or sixth overall. In a lot of leagues, I wasn't in a position to get him because the hype went so high that he was getting selected before I even had a chance at it. But I did get him like fifth or sixth in one league because I sort of bought into it. And then I think when I took a step back mid to late season, I realized that, you know, we came into the year expecting he was going to split time with Damian Williams. Williams opts out because of COVID, and then that was sort of opened the floodgates. And that's when we were ready. We were like, to the moon, like, let's go, you know. And maybe we should have pumped the brakes on that one a little bit. So I do think that he was sort of a victim of our overhype, and not necessarily that he had a poor season or anything. But that being said, go ahead, yeah.
I would say there's a good chance that I have to go back and check my old tweets, but I think there's a good chance that I actually might have tweeted Clyde Edwards-Helaire to the moon, because like, I really thought that like he was just going to dominate this year.
I do think, though, that he will be better next year. Now, I'm curious what happens with Damian Williams after having taken the year off. You know, if he comes back, how much he works into the rotation, what happens. But I do think with, you know, a year under his belt, hopefully having some training camp and maybe preseason next year, if Clyde Edwards-Helaire gets better and if he really is discounted, then maybe he ends up being a draft bargain in 2021. So we talked about the pass catchers, right? We know Kelce is going to be a first-round pick, maybe a high first-round pick. Travis or Tyreek Hill, probably what, a late first-round pick, I would think. At worst, early second round, he's coming off the board. Is there a third trustworthy pass catcher in that offense? I mean, is this the Mecole Hardman year? Does, you know, I don't know, Byron Pringle suddenly show up somewhere? Is there a guy that you're willing to take a late round dart throw at in this offense for next year?
I think it'll depend on what their receiving room looks like. Cause if it looks like it does now, where they have like DeMarcus Robinson and Watkins and Pringle and Hardman, then I think it's going to be a lot of what it is now. Like a lot of those guys shifting and whichever one manages to catch the long ball for the touchdown that week is going to be the one that you want in fantasy. But, you know, like say Sam, I mean, there was rumors last year that Sammy Watkins was going to retire and he was going to like move to live with some aliens or whatever his story was. He had a weird story, but like if he's gone or and, you know, like Robinson moves or something like that, or if they invest a high draft pick or money into a wide receiver. Because I think that is the one missing piece for making this offense completely unstoppable, because you already have Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce, who are as hard to guard as any combination in the NFL. But I think the fact that they have speedsters who can beat coverage one-on-one, like deep down the field, is it helps stretch things out. But if you add a true second wide receiver who can make an impact every single week. Like, how are you going to guard this offense? So I'm kind of hopeful that they do add a third piece here and we do get a third trustworthy each week option, because who doesn't want more exposure to Kansas City?
I mean, we all want as many pieces of that offense, which is why I think we had a lot of folks sort of, you know, playing the upside for a Mecole Hardman late, just hoping we can get somebody else to pop in that offense. And it hasn't happened yet. Maybe it does. By the way, things Sammy Watkins believes that he is an alien. He has seen a spaceship. He has seen someone teleport. And that we die every day and are reborn, which answers the question Billie Eilish asked when she said, when we all fall asleep, where do we go? So if we could get Billie Eilish and Sammy Watkins in the same room, I think they can have a heart to heart and really come up with some things there.
As someone who believes in aliens, I'm like I hear that story and I'm like, that's wild. But then I'm like, I mean, if there were aliens on this planet and they were like, hey, I'm an alien, none of us would believe them. So maybe he's telling the truth.
So here's the thing. Here's one of the wild things, right? This past year that we have been living through obviously has been, as they say, unprecedented and wild. One of the low-key wildest things about this is that while we were dealing with a pandemic and, you know, the election and all the fallout, you know, thereafter, you know, there were times where, like, the FBI and the CIA and the U.S. government was, like, you know, declassifying things, saying that they have documented alien visits to this planet, right? Like the government is just basically saying, oh, yeah, no, like, you know, we've seen aliens and, you know, here's some classified documents for you to read. And, like, the American people were just like, yeah, you know, we got other things going on right now. Like, we can't really deal with this. That's how wild this year has been. So there you have it. Those are our 32 exit interviews as we go and pick apart each team. Obviously, with free agency and the draft coming, we'll kind of get into what may happen with some of these teams and what goes on for the next years to come. By the way, I'm sure some of you know this already. We do take some of these clips from this show and we put them out there. We put them on social media. You can find all of them on YouTube. So go check out our YouTube channel there, youtube.com/NFL Fantasy Football. Plus, we occasionally do things that are for YouTube only. So things that maybe you don't hear on the podcast that you didn't see during the season on NFL Fantasy Live, things that are expressly video on demand. So go check it out, youtube.com/NFL Fantasy Football. Like and subscribe, right? That's what all the kids say nowadays. So go and do that. Last thing before we go, there is football this weekend in some shape or form. There is the Senior Bowl, which is going on now in Mobile, which I think has been funny because while most of my Twitter timeline has been flooded with, you know, stonks and Robin Hood and all this kind of stuff, every now and then, like, you know, some Senior Bowl stuff kind of slips through there and it just makes me sort of laugh a little bit. So that's going to happen. There's also this new version of the Pro Bowl, which is not like the normal Pro Bowl, obviously, because of COVID. But there's a Madden version where I think there are some players from both the AFC and NFC, and I think some celebrities. Like, I know Snoop Dogg is going to be involved as well, because Snoop Dogg is involved in, like, literally everything nowadays.
Including chips?
Like, yeah, he's selling, like, chips and cell phones and beer. And I think he's doing, like, an America's Got Talent knockoff with Cody Rhodes or something like that on TNT. Like, Snoop Dogg's literally everywhere. But he's going to be involved in this, like, Madden 21 Pro Bowl sort of thing. If you had to pick one football thing to watch this weekend, is it the Senior Bowl or would it be the Madden Pro Bowl for you?
For me, it would be the Senior Bowl because this is the time of year before the NFL draft where I kind of start to dive in and get caught up on these prospects, because during the NFL season, it is hard to watch college football a whole lot. So this is the time of year where I kind of familiarize myself with these players that are coming into the NFL draft and going to be the players that we're going to be discussing, you know, all summer long, because everyone loves rookies leading up to fantasy drafts. So I would be more likely to watch the Senior Bowl, but maybe I'll play some Madden this weekend. Can you, like, download the Pro Bowl rosters or anything and play that? That would be pretty fun.
That would be really fun. I should find out. I mean, you know, our pal and former, you know, show co-host, Matt Franciscovich, the franchise, works for EA. He works for Madden. I should ask him. He would know if we could do that sort of thing. So I will, I'll do my best, and I'll try to, you know, report back via either Slack or Twitter or something like that and let you know. I would say that was all very responsible of you, because I probably would just watch the Madden Pro Bowl. I mean, like, that is the smart, wise, responsible answer in, like, you know, getting better at your job. But I think I'd watch the Madden Pro Bowl and then just watch the Senior Bowl clips that will probably come across my Twitter timeline and kind of watch it.
You might miss them, though, with all the aliens and stocks and all that going on right now.
Right. I mean, I'd have to, like, mute a lot of things to get the football stuff in there. But I don't know. I can figure out a way to maybe make it happen. So, I don't know, but I feel like maybe next week we can regroup. We can talk a little bit about the Senior Bowl. Maybe we'll get our pal Matt Okada, see if he's available to jump in with us. I know that he's very much a dynasty football guy. I know he's watching a lot of these things. So I feel like, yeah, it'd be a good time. Maybe we'll tap Okada on the shoulder and see if he's available to jump in and let us know what happened down there in Mobile and how much we should be paying attention to that. In the meantime, that is it. We are done. We appreciate you hanging out with the NFL Fantasy Football Show. You know the drill. Tell two friends to tell two friends. Rate, review, and remember, Instagram is just Twitter for people who go outside. Be safe, take care of yourselves, wear a mask, and we will see you on Tuesday.